Hey guys, it's Eric G from Around the House. Our Made in America 250 campaign celebrates the American manufacturers shaping real design, like Dal Tile. As a kitchen designer, I've used Dal Tile on my own projects because great design starts with great materials made right here in America. In this episode, we dig into how American-made tile elevates your next project. If you haven't experienced Dal Tile, you need to check them out. Go back and listen to episode 2241, Around the House with Eric G, wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Around the House with Eric G, your go-to source for everything home improvement. Whether you're a DIY enthusiast or just looking to make your space shine, Eric G is here to guide you through the latest tips, tricks, and trends. So grab your toolbox, put on your thinking cap, and let's get to work right here on Around the House with Eric G.
Welcome to the Around the House show. I'm Eric G. Thanks for joining me today. Boy, this is our midweek special. This is where we talk about the stuff that didn't make it into last weekend's show. And of course, isn't making it into this weekend's show. And we got one where we're going to be talking about rentals today. And this is kind of an important discussion. So I've been watching here in my city of Portland. And bear with me on this. This isn't some sports talk, but I got to tell this story first. It'll make sense in a minute. So this is interesting. In the summer of 2024 here in Portland, Oregon, the city acquired the basketball and hockey arena, which is Moda Center, and basically entered in a new operating lease with what is Rip City Management, which is the ownership of the Blazers. And the Moda Center is now owned by the city of Portland, making the city the Blazers' landlord. Now, we have been going through, are we going to lose the team? Yeah, we probably could. I've seen this happen in Seattle, where the NBA let my Seattle Supersonics get ripped out of our hands. And, well, this is building up the exact same way. So if we look at the July 16th draft term sheet that the city sent over to them, it requires a 20-year lease commitment, all home games played at the arena, an annual $3 million property tax payment from ownership, clear caps on public funding, safeguards against cost overruns, and then Councillor Pertl-Ginn stated asks, included a long-haul commitment to stay in Portland with consequences for breaking the lease early. And on due diligence, the city signed an NDA specifically so it could see under the hood of the Blazers' finances, including information the team wouldn't want shared. And that's from the Portland Tribune. Now, if you're a landlord in Portland, you get one-year leases. You're renting a home out to somebody, the tenant can leave. And if you want to end it because maybe you need to do work on it or something happens where you need that house, you're going to pay anywhere from $2,900 to $4,500 to your tenant to end it. The city also has rules for income screening capped at 2x rent, individualized assessment required before denial. There is that 9.5% cap, but the property taxes on those increases come out of that 9.5% cap. So there is a whole set of rules if you are a landlord. But you know something? The city of Portland, now that they're a landlord, doesn't want anything to do with that for themselves. So here's the problem of the thought process of all these rules that they put for landlords. And we're talking today, if you haven't figured out, is if you want to be a landlord or not, do you want to have a rental property? These rules get very interesting. So here's the first rule that I see. If you can't fix rent later, you're going to set it higher now. This is simple math. Caps constrain increases, not initial rents. Every landlord in a capped market prices the risk that costs overrun the cap for the next 5 years. So they're figuring out, going, oh my gosh, we're going to have to go high because I can't change it later. That's a permanent premium that are paid by every new tenant, including the ones the law was written to help. And then screening limits get mutualized into everybody's rent. As a landlord, when you can't decline risk, you price it. A tenant with a 750 score and 8 years of clean history subsidizes the loss you're statistically going to eat. It's just insurance math. This is just basic business math. Small landlords sell, and that entire unit leaves the rental pool. So if you look at the, I think it's the Diamond, McQuaid, and Kins 2019 American Economic Review study found that landlords covered by rent control reduced rental supply by 15% by selling to owner occupants and redeveloping. So as a reduced supply, then citywide rents go up 5.1%. So the compliance cost is roughly fixed per unit. So it hits on the owner of one or two houses heaviest. And those are the people that rent out single family homes. This is easy stuff to figure out. And then quality degrades above the habitability floor. So if you think about it, and this is why if you go to places like New York City and places like that, where there's thousands of places that aren't rented, if you have a building that needs to spend $40,000 to $60,000 to get it into a nicer place and they can't charge higher rates, that unit is sometimes cheaper to sit there empty than to spend $40,000 or $60,000 and lose that money over the years. So some landlords are going, I'm going to wait until this changes and those units are not going to get rented out. It's cheaper to take the loss. And so that's really interesting how that changes things. And so we're seeing this. And of course, we have out here on the West Coast, we've talked about this in shows before, that construction has just absolutely stopped in so many different areas around. And we're seeing that, I mean, I think there's an 80% reduction in new housing starts in Seattle. I just saw that on social media today from it was a Puget Sound Journal. That's a big number. Yeah. So the more we're seeing these rules, the more that we're seeing of people not renting, which also reduces supply. So this is where it gets interesting. So now there is this new cap that they've got out there. It's not binding yet here in Portland. And so that's not bad. Portland's average asking rent fell from $1,844 in quarter one, 2026, which was a 2% year-over-year decline with a vacancy at 8.4%. So we're not going to sit here and tell you that the 9.5% ceiling is driving rents up. But here's the thing. Damage is showing up in the investment decision, not in this year's rent roll. And what we're going to see is more and more of those homes going on the marketplace to be sold for single family homes. And this is the thing. There are plenty of areas in the country, and they're usually the bigger cities. It's the New Yorks. It's the Philadelphias. It's the on the West Coast out here, the Seattle, the Portlands, the San Franciscos, the Los Angeleses, where this now new construction on the rules in Portland here are exempt for 15 years. So rent control is not the cause of permit collapse. But I tell you what, why would you want to invest in housing if you know there's a really good chance you're going to lose your butt with rent controls? So instead of that company coming in and saying, we could put some apartments on this block here downtown and put a 15-story building in, they're going, how's Boise look? And so we're seeing areas like Portland here where I'm at. We've lost more than 20,000 jobs in 2025. And we're going to have at least half of that in 2026. Now, multifamily permits fell 23% nationally since the pandemic boom, with Western metro areas leading in the decline. Now, I have a theory on this as well, with rental homes especially, and apartments. If we're deporting, and we're not going to get into this political thing, but we're just going to talk about pure math here, guys. If you're deporting a couple million people, that's a couple million people's worth of rentals that are going out. Most of these people are not buying homes here in the United States because it's pretty hard if you are working under the table, you don't have a W-2 form, that kind of stuff as an independent contractor, whether you're working for a lawn care or a contractor, or you're working in the fields or what, working in a restaurant, whatever you're doing, if you're working under the table, you're not out buying a house. So most of these people are living in rental units. So are we going to see if we deport some record amount of illegal aliens here in the United States? Yeah, that could make a small dent in that number out there. No one's really talking about that, but that can make a huge effect. Now, Culturally, you could see 2, 3, 4, 6, 8 people living in a household. So it's not going to have that big of a direct response because they are a very family oriented society that I think is pretty awesome. But really, in Oregon or Washington State where I'm at, or many of these other cities, would I recommend that you as a single family homeowner get a house and make it into a rental? Depends where you're at. Short-term rentals can be a headache as well. When you look at short-term rentals, and you'll hear me complain about this on this show all the time here, where I've got one out in Cannon Beach, Oregon with my brother. Now, here's the problem with that. Those guys out there at Cannon Beach, they do not like the short-term rental people because the city council is mostly hotel owners. So they are trying to change that rule. I can't use a fire pit at the house unless it's gas out in the front yard. Even as a building owner, I can't. But my neighbor across the street can because we rent out a few times a year for short-term rentals. So you can really, on the short-term rental game in some areas, limit your rights to use your own property that are different than your neighbors that's not doing it. So there's a lot of things to consider here, but I would sure take a look and see what's happening in your marketplace before you make that decision, before you dive in head deep. Is it going to be favorable? Do you have the cost controls? And if that place is empty for 6 months or 9 months, as you have to do work on or anything, do you have the money to carry the costs? Because you could buy the place. What happens if somebody gets in there and destroys it? So I don't want to talk people away from being landlords and making good investments. Just be very careful where you're doing it. Because in plenty of places out there across the country and more the metro area, you can get stuck what's going on. And I don't want to see that happening and see you get burned when you're just trying to save for retirement, for generational income. So do your research, find out what the rules are in your area, and make sure that you can limit your liabilities as best you can. Hey, if you got a comment on this, guys, send me a message over at aroundthehouseonline.com. I'd love to hear your take on it. I think many of these overreaching rent controls are bad for the marketplace and they make things more expensive and not less expensive. What's your take? I'm always curious. All right, guys, that's my little rant on rent controls and how they can affect single family people out there that are trying to invest. Real quick, from the Consumer Product Safety Commission, which is CPSC.gov here in the U.S., Panasonic recalls electric toaster ovens due to shock and fire hazards. Consumers should stop using the recalled toaster oven immediately and contact Panasonic for a full refund. There's about 11,480 of those in the U.S., with 2,184 sold in Canada. Let's see, anything else here that we see? There's not too much stuff out. A lot of toys, furniture. There are a couple step stools that you see out there. But really, besides that, and the Conair Cuisinart Perfor Burner 3-in-1 gas grills that we talked about last week, there's 12,660 of those in the U.S. That oven glass can shatter during use. Got to be careful of that. Otherwise, that in the Greenworks recalling 24-volt and 48-volt cobalt yard power tools with USB-C batteries. Those are the last ones here that are big on the list. If you have one of those products or worried about that, maybe you've got some furniture because there's always a ton of it, or kid stuff, you can always go to cpsc.gov. All right, everybody, have a great rest of the week. I'm Eric G. To find out more about us, head over to aroundthehouseonline.com and make sure you check out all our videos on both of our YouTube channels. We'll see you Saturday. Thanks for tuning in to Around the House.
Thanks for tuning in to the Around the House show. Make sure you subscribe on your favorite way to catch podcasts. Also, be sure to subscribe to our new YouTube channel, and you can find it at Around the House HQ, and ring that bell for updates. Thanks for tuning in to Around the House. Take this good time and turn it up louder. No one ever talks about the nights they went to bed, counting them sheet, catching Z's, getting beauty rest, acting your age, don't make a good story, knock one back, no bug. About the shots they didn't take.
Drinks. Hey guys, it's Eric G with Around the House. If you're looking to upgrade your home with beautiful stone, check out Evolve Stone. This premium composite stone veneer is proudly made in the USA. It's lightweight, cuts like wood with ordinary tools, and installs fast with a finish nailer, giving you that high-end masonry look on siding, fireplaces, feature walls, outdoor kitchens, and more. It stands up beautifully to UV, freeze-thaw, and tough weather anywhere. We just celebrated their fantastic Made in America heritage in our latest episode, so make sure and go back and listen. You'll love it. Right now, use promo code ATH26 for a free sample sent right to you. Visit EvolveStone.com today and tell them Eric G. sent you.